Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto, Chapter 2. Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. Text number 40. Pati chutam tishtati dishtarakshitam. Grahesthitam tad vihitam vinashati. Jivati anatopi tadikshito bane. Grahe bigupto syahato na jivati. But translation. Sometimes one loses his money on a public street where everyone can see it, and yet his money is protected by destiny and not seen by others. Thus the man who lost it gets it back. On the other hand, if the Lord does not give protection, even money maintained very securely at home is lost. If the Supreme Lord gives one protection, even though one has no protector and is in the jungle, one remains alive. Whereas a person well protected at home by relatives and others sometimes dies, no one being able to protect him. Purport. These are examples of the supremacy of the Lord. Our plans to protect or annihilate do not act, but whatever he thinks of doing actually happens. The examples given in this regard are practical. Everyone has had such practical experiences, and there are also many other clear examples. For instance, Prahlad Maharaj said that a child is certainly dependent on his father and mother, but in spite of their presence, the child is harassed in so many ways. Sometimes, in spite of a supply of good medicine and an experienced physician, a patient does not survive. Therefore, since everything is dependent on the free will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, our only duty is to surrender unto him and seek his protection. Sometimes one loses his money on a public street where everyone can see it, and yet his money is protected by destiny and not seen by others. Thus the man who lost it gets it back. On the other hand, if the Lord does not give protection, even money maintained very securely at home is lost. If the Supreme Lord gives one protection, even though one has no protector and is in the jungle, one remains alive. Whereas a person well protected at home by relatives and others sometimes dies, no one being able to protect him. So this is another verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam continuing the description of transcendental knowledge that is a next step following the verse which I believe we read yesterday. Yes, the women who lost their husband were wailing, and they were addressed by the boy. And Prabhupada gives in the purport a wonderful description that we discussed yesterday, which was that no one can challenge the will of the Supreme Lord, that absolute principle. And it was Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance day. It was very appropriate day to discuss that wonderful transcendental verse, or that wonderful transcendental description principle beyond the conception of intelligence of this material world. And when a devotee hears that statement, see if I can find that and read it again. Yes. He can do anything, and no one can question him. If he were answerable to us concerning why he does something and why he does not, his supremacy would be curtailed. So when a devotee hears this, he's very, very happy to hear such powers, such authority, such supremacy, such absolute condition, status of Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is a test of course, every devotee, but the more advanced devotees, the more one becomes advanced, the more one is very happy to hear of the glories of the Supreme Lord, and very happy to hear the supremacy of the Lord established, the theistic position. And that is the common denominator of the devotees. It's upon that platform that we are brothers and sisters, and we are very happy. And it is upon that platform that Vaikuntha living and Goloka living is based. Because everyone is happy for Krishna to be in the absolute position and for us to be surrendered to Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, now I will give you some more description of my glories from which you will feel great joy. So the non-devotees do not feel great joy when they hear the glories of Krishna. That is the disease of the conditioned soul. Why is he so great? Sometimes a child wonders, well, who was there before God? Or the atheist also, atheist philosopher, will say, well, you say God created everything. That doesn't answer, because who created God? So you're not really giving an explanation. But what the atheist or the non-devotee cannot understand is when the description is given that Krishna created the entire universe and he exists as the absolute, supreme, unchallengeable authority of everything. Devotee doesn't have to go beyond that, because the search for knowledge is completed. The devotee's heart is very happy to hear. The devotee loves to hear how Krishna conquers and defeats and is in position of supreme. Whereas a non-devotee, they cannot tolerate the great opulence of Krishna. So when they hear these things, they want to challenge. Oh, why is he? So if you go to the kingdom of God, it is very blissful, very happy. Well, what is happy? Why is it happy? Because you're with God, you're with Krishna. Well, what's happy about that? Because he's supreme. Well, why is he supreme? How come everyone loves him? Well, what about me? Well, he loves you. Yeah, well, what about everybody else? Well, he's the supreme. We give him pleasure. Well, what about me? That is disease of the conditioned soul. So as long as we have this disease, then we must suffer some in this material world. We must be separated from the absolute truth. We're not actually ever separated from the absolute truth. There's no question of ever being separated from the absolute truth. But we may feel the separation under the veil of Maya, the ahankar, the false ego. The false ego is the chain that connects us to this illusion. It is a chain, and it is a subtle chain. It's not a physical chain. It is a very subtle chain. It is made of energy more subtle than intelligence. There's a gross energy, which is also subtle itself. No, the gross energy is made of subtle energy. But anyway, we can see and touch. then more fine than the earth and the water and fire, which we can see. Air, we can only see the result of it. We can feel the air. We can feel the result of the air, so we know it's present. And ether, we can intellectually understand. Space must be present. And then mind, we know mind. We can't see mind, but we can see the effect of mind, and we can experience our own mind. And intelligence, we can see also the effect. The false ego is more subtle even than the intelligence. And it is an energy. It is a material energy of the Supreme Lord. And it is the energy which connects the soul, which hovers. The soul actually is not in the body. Prabhupada described, we think we're in the body because we're confined to the consciousness of the body by the false ego. But in fact, the soul is outside the body. It's hovering. It's hovering in the area of the body because of being attached to the body. And in the presence of super soul, just as the child is always with its mother, the mother is so kind, mother does not leave the child alone. The super soul never leaves the soul alone out of great affection. It's never parted. When Srila Prabhupada was in the U.S. and we had our political camp, political days, this is just a parenthesis, a little aside to illustrate. He said, so it was said to him, well, Srila Prabhupada, in the modern democracies, we separate church and state. We don't allow we don't allow religion into political discussion. And that was in those days, in the 1970s, no one ever dared mention God or religion in any political discussion. Never was done. Of course, today, you cannot have political discussion without mention of religion and God. You cannot. Anywhere in the world. Prabhupada was the first. I can tell you historically, the Christians and the Jewish people in America, they never thought to discuss. Prabhupada was the first. He said, no, of course, we have In God We Trust, motto on the money, but it just was put there. Actually, it's a Masonic. That's a Masonic thing. It's a whole different discussion. But anyway, Srila Prabhupada, so they said, no, you cannot, they said, Prabhupada, we cannot have In God We Trust party because they do not allow separation of church. They don't allow discussion of politics, religion and politics, because we have separation of church and state. Prabhupada said, oh, the criminals take vote that there will be no government in the prison. So now we will vote that the government has no more authority in the prison. It is not possible. So you want to separate, put God out of politics? You want to put God out of anywhere? It is not possible. You want to put yourself out of the ether, out of space, and put yourself out of the air? It is not possible. We're situated within the air. So there's no separation of us from God at all, at any moment, at any time, at any place, in any conception. There's no place. There's no atom. There is no space between the atoms where God is not present, fully present. So that's in a gross sense. But in a more subtle sense, he never leaves the individual soul. We're never, so not only in the sense that we are now within his creation. This seat upon which I'm sitting is made of cloth. The cloth is made from cotton. The cotton grows from the earth. Being nourished by the water and the sunshine from the seed of the cotton plant. The cotton seed cannot be manufactured by any mechanical process. It's not possible. It's a living thing. Life comes from life. That was Prabhupada's motto. Life comes from life. And what is the original life? That is Krishna. They say life comes from matter. Evolution. Prabhupada said, no, we have never seen life come from matter. Life comes from life. So the seed of the cotton plant is alive. means it comes from Krishna. So that sea and the water is Krishna's, and the earth is Krishna's, and the sun is Krishna's, and the air is Krishna's. So the cotton is Krishna's energy. So we're sitting on Krishna's energy. So there's the wood is Krishna's energy. The electricity that runs this microphone comes from the sun. It's fire. Electricity is nothing but fire. It's captured fire. It may be generated from the hydroelectric dam, but the hydroelectric dam is simply capturing the sunlight, sun energy. The sun evaporates the water, places it on the land, and the water runs back to the ocean. That whole process is the energy of the sun. So this is sun. This is Krishna's sun energy. So we're not separated from Krishna. But in a more personal sense, because that's Krishna's creation in which we now live, being imprisoned here. But in a more personal sense, Krishna is with us. We are hovering about this body, and Krishna is hovering there with us. We not see him because our spiritual eyes are closed. We're only seeing through the eyes of this body, being bound to this body by the false ego. Now, the influence of the false ego, we become conditioned souls. And the conditioned souls become affected by the three modes of material nature. And under the mode of tamas, our intelligence, our knowledge, the natural knowledge of the soul becomes covered. And we become involved in caring for the needs of this body only. So one who's influenced strongly by the mode of ignorance is only interested in the demands of the body. So we see animals, they're very influenced by the mode of ignorance. So they're only interested in where's my food, I'm sleepy, I want sex, is there some enemy present, some danger? Now, the human being comes a little higher out of influence of the mode of ignorance and comes under the influence of the mode of passion. In the mode of passion, the living being under the conditioned state begins to develop a little more self-awareness and starts to think, I'm a separate living being. I am separate from all that I see. I'm separate from this world. I'm separate. me and mine. This is me, and everything about me is... Now I'm not simply interested in eating and sleeping. I'm interested in me and who I am and how you can honor me and what I have done and what I'm going to do and who I am materially and what is mine. Oh, it is mine. I have this. I own this. This is my wife. This is my children. This is my mother. This is my father. This is my house. This is my country. This is my bank balance. This is my fame. This is my education. I am a very intelligent man. I'm 59 years old, and I have accomplished this and that, and I this and that. And that is all the mode of passion. It's all illusion. Because I'm not a 59-year-old American man. That's not, if you see that, then if I think that, if you see that, then we're both operating under the influence of the Rajas illusion of false ego. Because, and we can just analyze, a few years ago I was a little baby. And through no effort on my part, not under my control, I've now become a 59-year-old man. But I was neither one. It is material nature. It is a process of material nature. The body is produced of material nature. And it is going through the various transformations. And in the course of time, it will dissolve. It has come into appearance. It has come into being. It appears to be. It appears to be real. But it is not real. Because in a few years, it will be gone. It will dissolve back into material nature. So when one sees in different bodies, different beings, a different existence in each manifestation of material energy, then that is under the influence of rajas. And one comes a little higher in consciousness as the soul evolves further in consciousness, then one comes into contact with the teachings of the Vedas. And the Vedas shine light into the darkness of this material world to give us knowledge which leads to enlightenment, liberation, full consciousness, return to our condition in spiritual reality, released from the chain of false ego. So here is the, so this is the beginning of civilization. This is the beginning of human life, of Aryan life, is to get this understanding of the presence of the Supreme Lord. The presence of the Supreme Lord within the environment in which we live. Otherwise, in the mode of Rajas and Tamas, there's no perception of the Supreme Lord. In the mode of Tamas, there's no consciousness. It's just food and sleep and sex and defense. In the mode of Rajas, there it's just me and mine. So in the mode of goodness, now there begins to be a presence of the understanding of Supreme Lord in the form here of destiny. So the materialist may, so here's the example. A person may lose some money on the street. And two persons lose the money on the street. One person comes back and the money is there. Or you may, same person, you may one day, you lose it today, you come back and you find it. Tomorrow you lose it again, and you come back and it's gone. So why? Why is it? What is going on? What is the science of this? So if you ask a person the mode of passion, they'll say, you were negligent. You were negligent. You lost your money. That's the cause. What's the cause of the loss of money? You were negligent. What is the cause of the fact that I found it again? You were lucky. You were just lucky. It was just by chance. So Srimad Bhagavatam says, no. So that's a lower understanding. It is true. Maybe you were negligent. That is true. But why does one negligent person lose his money and another negligent person does not lose his money? The Bhagavatam says, destiny. That is the hand of destiny. And just so the negligence may not be an issue, the next example is given. Sometimes a child is given non-negligent, perfect protection, and yet the child dies. In another instance, the child is completely neglected, and it lives. Well, what is the basis of this? Now, the modern materialist will say, well, now that's not negligence. That's just chance. That's just chance. Or actually, first they will beyond. They won't do that. At first they'll say no. This child, they'll look for the cause. Why did this child die and this child live? Well, because this child had an incurable disease and this child had no disease. This child, unfortunately, and so they'll do an autopsy. And they'll find, well, this child was born with a heart that was too small, and so no matter what the parents did, the child could not survive. Whereas this child was born healthy, so even though it was in the jungle and surrounded by tigers, because it was born healthy, it lived. So it was the cause was material nature. The cause is not destiny. The cause is material nature. That's a person in the mode of passion. We'll see that way. Person's mode of goodness will ask a little further, wait, why was this child born with the heart valve that did not work, and this child was born with a healthy heart in the jungle, and the tiger didn't see it. Oh, chance. Last refuge of the scoundrel. When they cannot give a logical, rational explanation, then comes chance. What does chance mean? What does it mean? Let's get the, was it Wikipedia dictionary? What is it? What is chance? Chance is a random occurrence for which there is no explanation. There is no such thing in our experience. Suppose a woman becomes pregnant, and her father, she's not married, so her father's very angry. You have become pregnant. How? By chance. It will not be accepted. Or a business has gone bankrupt, and the CEO suddenly has in his bank account crores of rupees. So he is brought to the police for prosecution. Where have the, give explanation where these, it's appeared by chance. In my bank account, it just appeared by chance. No one will accept that. It doesn't happen. Prabhupada was first told of the Big Bang Theory. It is a theory that, you know, all the universe, all the matter in the universe was compact in some incredibly tight ball and exploded in a Big Bang. So the devotees explained, Prabhupada, there's Big Bang Theory to explain the creation of the universe. Prabhupada, oh, what is this Big Bang? He said, noise? It is noise? Yes, Prabhupada, explosion. Explosion? Yes. Yes, Prabhupada, the scientists say the universe came into existence by explosion, by Big Bang, and from that everything has evolved. Prabhupada said, oh, if there's bomb in the marketplace, what is the first question that everyone asked? Who put it there? Huh? What's the amount of damage? After what is the amount of damage, then who put it there? And someone says, it simply appeared by chance. Or, it doesn't matter who put it there. That will not be accepted in our ordinary experience. So why do we, in matters of great importance, set aside that which we follow every day in our normal experience? Great things must follow the same laws as small things. Otherwise, what is the question of physical law? So in small things, we know if there's a Big Bang, there's someone who put the bomb there. So if there's Big Bang, there must be God. Similarly, there is no chance. There is no chance. This world is very orderly. This world operates according to natural laws. So one child lives despite our protection, and one child dies. One child lives without protection, one child dies despite our protection. Proves, for those who want to know, who are civilized and have some sattvic understanding, that there is a force beyond our ordinary perceptions. Now, the Vedic scholars will take it one step and say, oh, that is karma kandya. That is karma. That is karma. That is the result of the previous deeds. And they let it go at that. Destiny. But that analysis stops short because the question is, who... You may ask why. First, why one has this karma, one has that karma? Oh, it's previous deeds. Well, why those deeds are getting those results? But more importantly, who is delivering the result of the previous deed? what is the force that delivers the result of the previous deed? Who is managing that system? Who is controlling that system? If someone comes home from the court and they have money, lots of money, and they say, I just went to the courthouse and picked it up, you will think he's crazy. It was awarded by the judge. It was awarded by the system. Or someone goes to court. They go to court in the morning and you call them. Where are they? I have one friend who's a lawyer friend. He went to court with his client. We tease him because he had to go. His client went to, he went to the court with his client, and the client hadn't told him that he was wanted for a crime. He went to a divorce court, and when he took the stand and they asked him, state your name. My name is Tom Jones. So immediately the bailiff came and arrested him. He went to prison. So we thought, we teased his lawyer. He was not a very good lawyer. He went to court for a divorce, ended up in prison. But anyway, if you go to court and you end up in jail, then you can understand there's a system behind that process. There's a judge. There's a police system. There's a prison house. Similarly, if you get a bad karma, there has to be an architect, a controller of that. So who is that? Controller, that is Krishna. So Krishna is behind, so I've used too much time, we're almost finished, because this is only half. The first half of this lesson is, there is a supreme controller behind that which we see in our ordinary lives in this material world. Who allow all these things that happen, and this, for example, now we heard this morning, there was an assassination in Pakistan. This is not good news for anyone. But it's been allowed to happen by the arrangement of destiny. Inconceivable how these things happen on a massive global scale or on an individual scale. Our heart is beating. Every one of us, we are living only by the beat of the heart. Each beat is under the control of the Supreme Lord. It is not under our control. Every moment that we live is by the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That we have lived through the 45 minutes of this class is on the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That we are in this temple room before, in his presence, hearing his words spoken by his representatives, Vyasadeva and the great personalities, Sukadeva Goswami. That is by his order that this is taking place. Each day that we live, and if you don't believe it, just stay young. Stay 18. Desire to become 18 and then stay there. It's not keep your hair from turning gray. Keep it from falling out. Keep your skin from becoming loose. Keep your body from getting pains. Stop that process. You cannot stop it. Each month, in Vedic calculation, the smallest moment of time is measured by how long it takes one ray of sunlight to cross over one atom. That is the smallest unit of time. And your life is measured in those units. So he is there. So the conclusion is, our only business is surrender unto him, because we have no independence. The extent we think we are independent, we are still under the me and mine Rajas authority. We're under the authority of Rajas. And that's, of course, once we're under the false ego, then Rajas has its power over us. And we must graduate. We've graduated from Tamas to Rajas, mostly. We're human beings. Now we must graduate from Rajas to Sattva Gun, and then to Sudha Sattva. And that process is called surrender. We heard yesterday about knowledge. Vidya vinaya sampane. Well, that's different. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga. That the process of vidya or knowledge in vairagya is important, helpful, but ultimately the process goes beyond knowledge. It goes beyond renunciation. It is surrender to Krishna. So then the question, so our only business then is to surrender. We have no independence. We have no independence. We are not independent. So now let us surrender to him every moment. The moment being the amount of time it takes for one ray of sunlight to cross over one atom. Let us not have a single one of those moments in which we're not surrendered. Of course, that's not possible because we're under illusion. We're under the influence of Maya. But let us work for that process. Now, the question is only 5 more minutes. The whole next half is, how do you do that? What does it mean to be surrendered? Because we're now just passing through the disappearance day of Bhakti Siddhanta, and he, of course, all of the acharyas are instrumental, but he was one of the major revolutionaries in spiritual life. And Prabhupada is in his footsteps as his disciple, because when it says surrender to him only, we have no independence, what does that mean? That becomes a critical analysis. Because if he's in control of everything, why do we, then now life is easy. I'll just surrender, nothing to do. Nothing to do. Right? Why? He's in control. I have no independence, so I don't need to do anything. No. Now you must do more. Now you must do everything. Why? He's in control. I have no independence. That becomes the meditation. But we can follow what they said, what they did also. Prabhupada used to laugh and he would say, Arjuna never said, Krishna, you are a supreme personality of Godhead. You fight, I'll sleep. He never said, although it was the war and the outcome was totally under Krishna's control. Totally. But Arjuna was the warrior. He could have said, Krishna, get Daruka, he's your chariot driver. You want these people killed? You kill them. They're my brothers. I'm going to go meditate. You can easily do. Why should you be the chariot driver? You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna's absolute. We can't question why he does. But we know that he does want the living beings, his parts and parcels, to engage with him in this universal dance of bhakti. And in the universal, and you cannot get out of this material world until we join the dynamic movement of bhakti. That is the only way out. Because that is out. Everything else is in. And to join that, we first have to understand he is absolute and we are relative to him. And then engage in his service without judgment of him, with full energy and full enthusiasm. And then what do we do? How do we engage? According to what is in front of us. Bhakti Siddhanta rode in automobiles. He learned English. If Krishna is absolute and our only business is surrender to him, why should Bhakti Siddhanta learn English? Why shouldn't he just sit in Mayapur? And why don't you just sit in Mayapur and chant Hare Krishna and the whole Gaudiya Math will be manifested? Because Krishna's controlling everything. So why should he bother? He could just chant and pray to Krishna, Krishna, you do. And there are many spiritual persons who we must respect who think like that. But that is not the mission, that is not Lord Chaitanya's teachings. They will not get in an automobile. But we get in automobiles. We pick up computers. We do all of the modern, we use all of the modern energy. Why? Because Bhakti Siddhanta came from Lord Chaitanya's personal staff and taught us to do that. Lord Chaitanya put on saffron, the dress of the Mayavad, who was his arch, the persons he came to defeat. So because he does, then we do. Why does he do? We don't know. He could have just said to us, go to Himalayas and meditate. He could say whatever he wants. But he wants us to engage in this material world with full enthusiasm. So that's the process of surrender. To use fully everything that you have, everything that we have, everything available to us in Krishna's service, but carefully. Catching the big fish without getting wet. It must be done carefully. Otherwise, you get wet and you're ruined. Your spiritual life is ruined. Prabhupada once wrote, we want politics. And we were very enthusiastic. We had our political party. So Rupanuga and I, we were dressed up in our suits and we got cars and we wrote Prabhupada and we wanted money for more propaganda. So he stopped the whole program. So we wrote back to him, Prabhupada, we thought you wanted politics. He said, yes, I want politics, but not at the expense of Krishna consciousness. So we have to use everything, but not at the expense of Krishna consciousness. That requires intelligence. That is not the intelligence of one under the influence of tamas or rajas. That has to be intelligence of one under the influence of Sudhasattva. So we have to take the direction of the acharyas who have become free of this false ego and free of this materialistic contamination and beg for the direction of such persons and beg for the direction of the super soul who is present with all of us at all times, at every moment. Surrender to him, and he will guide us. Bhaktivinoda prayed, lead me on to Vrindavan, and spirit's power declare. So who is leading? That is a super soul. Situated with all of us. Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, surrender to him utterly. For by his direction, you will obtain transcendental peace and the supreme destination. But that's gradual. In the beginning, we don't have contact. He's with us, but we're not conscious of him. So we have to follow the Guru Maharaj, who is in contact with the super soul. And then gradually, by the following of Guru Maharaj and the principles of Vaidhi Bhakti, we become sufficiently purified that then we can also be in contact with the Param Atma. And when we come in contact with the Param Atma and we surrender to him, then that is the perfection of life. That is the goal. That is the state of consciousness for which we strive. And then he will give us direction how to catch the big fish without becoming wet. And he will lead us out of this entanglement in which we are now so deeply ensnared. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Sorry I didn't leave much time for questions. Maybe we have a minute or two if there are any questions, comments. Hare Krishna. Are we done? Well, that's a little bit of a long description, but yeah, I can. At the very end, at first he said we don't want politics at the expense of Krishna consciousness. So then a little bit later, I had a chance to speak with him a little further on it. I said, Srila Prabhupada. Well, he said to me, he said, I think you're still interested in politics. I said, yes, Prabhupada, but I don't want to do it unless you're enthusiastic about it. And he looked down at me with very kindly eyes, gentle look, and then he burst into a smile. And he said, oh, I'm enthusiastic. Just don't ask me for money. And then he laughed. So that was the end of that discussion. I didn't realize I had to get my own money from somewhere. So then he wrote to Rupanuga. I didn't know. He wrote to Rupanuga that Balavante can go to law school for his political. So I guess that was his way of telling me, go become a lawyer and get some money that way. Anyway, he said, we want that Krishna conscious persons shall set the perfect example in all fields of activities, including politics. He said, ultimately, Krishna wants his own men in positions of responsibility in this material world for the welfare of the people. He said, and we also want that. And therefore, that is the ultimate goal of the Krishna consciousness movement. We expect to push on this movement to that extent. Not for our own rajasic, egoistic gratification. That's the opposite of the process. We want to avoid that. But for the sake of the welfare of the people. So Krishna is waiting to give you everything. He only wants to see that you're qualified. As long as we have this, of course, we say Raja Rishi. So there has to be some Rajas to it. But it has to be a transcendentalized Rajas. Otherwise, we catch the big fish and the boat sinks. What's the point? So that was his move. So the impression I had of him at the time was like a very expert businessman who has a young apprentice or son who wants, almost like a person has a car and he has a five-year-old, let me drive. So they may let the child pretend to drive. And the businessman, the father, wants nothing more than to turn it over. But the child must be qualified. And of course, politics is a little dangerous because of the Rajas. There's a Rajas to it. So he, and Prabhupada said, you know, we would much rather have one devotee than hundreds of presidents. He was very opposed. You know, all the present leaders of human society, whether they be religious, scientific, political leaders are misleading the people to their ruin by not giving them spiritual life. And unfortunately, there is no practical spiritual life outside of the Lord Chaitanya's teachings. We're not sectarian. It's not like we're saying, because we recognize that Lord Jesus' teachings are valid. We're not. Lord Buddha's teachings are valid. Muhammad's teachings are valid. There's so many. They're all valid teachings. But for the present world, the mission of Lord Chaitanya, yada yada hi dharmasya, glanir bhavati bharata. He came for this time. And then his dear representative, Bhakti Siddhanta, was a member of his personal staff, adjusted it for the modern age. And Srila Prabhupada, as his perfect representative to the world as we know it. So here it is, for the sake of the people. And the others, without having that association, how can they give the people spiritual life? And they don't give them spiritual life, what is the value? What is the value of their human life? If they can't get out of Rajas Tamas, after 70 years, 80 years, in America, they're deeper in Rajas Tamas than they were when they were born. They're actually deeper in Tamas. They're the most successful ones. The movie stars and the rock and roll and the politicians, they are the most deeply immersed in Tamas by the end of life. They've spent all their good karma that they should have spent, their karma they should have spent for spiritual advancement, they have spent to dive deeper into Tamas Goon. It's like a child that takes a family fortune and squanders it on ridiculous things. You have a fortune, you've inherited this fortune, and you spend it, you squander it. I had a cousin who had lots, huge money, and he would get a limousine, and he would live in the back of the limousine. And just they would drive wherever, and he would just live in the back, stop and buy stuff in the stores and go to nightclubs. And he ran through $1 million in a few years. He ran through it. And then he was on the street in poverty. It's gone. Gone, finished. So they have some good karma. And instead of using it for some good purpose, investing it to get better karma back, or at least buy something of value, they squander it to become a rock and roll star or some mundane politician or have some moment of glory. And then, finished. Deep into Tamagun. They die. I had one big, big lawyer. I saw him at the end of his life. Big, nationally famous lawyer, Melvin Belli. I don't know if you know him, heard of him, San Francisco. He was alone. Nobody cared for him. All the other lawyers were just, they wouldn't even give him a seat. His karma had been used up, and it was gone. Never to be regained, gone, finished. So all of them, they're all going in that direction. And so the leaders are letting that happen for their own sense gratification. So the only hope is Prabhupada. So in God we trust has to happen. It has to happen. It will happen. It's only a matter of when some person comes who is qualified to do it. No, not at all. That was a joke. No.
Could you comment on, there's a rumor or there's a story that we've heard that Prabhupada said you would be the president. Could you comment on that?
He was joking.
What is the joke we want to hear?
It was just a private joke.
Was it
was what? It was initiated by Prabhupada when he was in Africa. He was in a car, and there was some terrible thing that happened, and his car barely missed being driven off the cliff or something, some dangerous thing. Prabhupada said at that time, Shyama Sundar was with him, I believe, and would everything Prabhupada would say, he would write it, and it would be transmitted back to the temples every day, and we would hear Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said at that point, Brahmins do not get involved in politics. Brahmins do not get involved. They have higher service of becoming liberated and teaching others. But sometimes when the condition is so bad, they get involved. They must interfere for the sake of the people. He said, so now we will begin to interfere. So at that point there was a devotee in Florida by the name of Amarendra Das Prabhu, who was a very politically active devotee before he was a devotee. He was a big anti-war, anti-Vietnam War activist. There was an opportunity, and so he, after hearing Prabhupada said this, I think he wrote Prabhupada or somehow, what Prabhupada's input at that point was, but Amarendra ran for office. And all the devotees got involved. And it was a very ecstatic occasion because he challenged all the other politicians with Prabhupada's philosophy. And it was very ecstatic. And it was just a lot of energy. The temple grew. And Amarendra was a friend of mine. And so I watched him and I talked with him. And he said, so you should also. So he was in a small town, college town, Gainesville, Florida. And I was in Atlanta, Georgia. It's a big city. So I wrote Prabhupada. It was an opportunity for it was a mayoral campaign. So I wrote Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada, I'd like to run for mayor of Atlanta. And I just wrote one little sentence. He wrote me back letter after letter after letter. So much detail. I thought, uh-oh. Now I can't get out of this. Because I just sort of wrote him on a whim. And after he said the way things he said, I couldn't get out of it. So I ended up having to run for mayor. And it was ecstatic experience. Because, you know, one campaign, debate. We had big debates. Big debates. And it was... we were carried on national news, and it was a big deal. One politician said, we have to help them in Africa. They are dying in Africa. So I said, they are dying here also. What are you doing for the dying ones here? We're not doing anything for the people dying every day. You're dying also. You have no program for people's spiritual life. And they were bewildered. He couldn't. And then one was saying, it was the days when abortion was a big deal. You know, the question of abortion. So there's one candidate, she said, we have a right to control our own bodies. So he said, then why don't you control your body from getting pregnant? We cannot control anything. We are not the controllers. And they would just become bewildered. Because they had never encountered the thought process. It was fun. But then, you know, then we got too much full of ourselves. Too much me and some crazy, we became crazy and we wrote Prabhupada, we need all this money, Prabhupada. Finished. Okay. we better stop. Hare Krishna. Jai.